B-Pod Studios.
The Mike Missinelli Show.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
The Fanatic. The Fanatic family.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, it is 3 o'clock. I'm going to tell you right now that our online ticket raid is now open. Just go to our website, 97.5 The Fanatic, and there will be a spot you can click on to procure the tickets, the last amount of tickets that we have for FanFest August 24th. And you know about it already. You know that we have all kinds of special guests coming, headed by one Allen Iverson, who will be there. Allen Iverson and Tobias Harris will be there. AI appearing courtesy of Time After Time Watches. Tobias Harris, courtesy of Metro by T-Mobile. Switch over to Metro by T-Mobile now. Take advantage of the best deal in wireless only at Metro. Of course, Time After Time Watches. Time After Time keeps Philly ticking. All right, I'm about to open the envelope for the final guest. Is this the final guest? No more surprises. This is it? This is the...
Who knows?
We never know.
Tell me and you, yeah, Mike.
They don't tell us. So who knows? It's going to come down the road. But I've been told that this is a pretty big announcement here. So let's see what we have.
Who is it?
Not open yet.
Colin.
Hold on a sec. 97.5 The Fanatic is once again thrilled to announce another huge addition to FanFest 2019.
Come on!
First we announced Allen Iverson. Then we added Tobias Harris. And now we are adding, ladies and gentlemen, a three-time Pro Bowler back in the city where he wants to be, where he longed to be. Ladies and gentlemen, our latest addition to FanFest 2019 is DeSean Jackson.
What? Are you serious?
DeSean Jackson.
Wow.
Everyone on site at FanFest will have a chance at a meet and greet with DeSean that day. Our details coming soon. So, you'll have a meet and greet with AI. You'll have a meet and greet with Tobias. Meet and greet with DeSean Jackson. We have busted it open. DeSean's appearance is made possible, Natalie, by whom?
FanFest is presented by FanDuel Sportsbook.
There you go. DeSean Jackson.
Also.
Also? What? We got an also?
Yeah. The ticket rate, right?
It's open now.
No, it's not.
No, it's closed?
Yes. Now, I can tell you that we had 25% more tickets than the last one.
Uh-huh.
We've never had this many tickets available in a ticket rate before, ever. Gone.
This joint will be busted out. Now, I last year there was a number that we cited. This year, we are limited by fire code, right?
Yep.
But we're going to get right to the fire code. What's the maximum amount of people that will be here? Because it's going to bust out.
The indoor, see, it's a little different for the indoors and the outdoors. We got outdoor activities, and thank goodness that we do. Because...
Could they bring 10 grand here?
That's what I think.
That's what
10 grand are the estimates?
Yeah.
That 10 grand at least.
Oh, my God.
And we're actually having to change our entrance. You know how we usually do our entrance?
Uh-huh.
People that have been in previous years, our entrance is going to be slightly different.
Right.
Because of how wild these numbers are.
Oh, my God. Look at that, man. AI, Bias Harris, DeSean Jackson, hanging out at FanFest. It's how big this thing is. They go, can we get to FanFest? You're in. By the way, we got burgers up the wazoo here today. The great people, Rob Wasserman, Justin Weathers. Rob is the owner of Rouge. He's the founder of the Philadelphia Burger Brawl. And Justin Weathers, who's co-owner of Stove and Tap and Lansdowne and Fraser, and also the Bercy, a fancy French joint, which I've been in many times in Ardmore. Very nice. The Philadelphia Burger, they brought us all kinds of burgers. That sampling the burgers that will be there. These burgers are fantastic. Rouge has, for many years, had the best burger in the city. And there are a lot of challengers. And it's being presented by Jim Beam, Philly Burger Brawl. Find out who has the best burger in the city. Sunday, September 15th, join over 60 restaurants at the Navy Yard as they brawl for bragging rights for the best burger and killer cocktails. A great event. New locations at the Navy Yard. Big location. Burger Brawl benefits the fund for the School District of Philadelphia. And, of course, Stove and Tap is in Lansdowne and Fraser. They have the vibe of a small-town pub with an urban atmosphere. They serve burgers there, flatbread, salads, and American classics. So if you're out that way, Fraser or Lansdowne, they're two different directions, I think. Yeah.
Not quite sure. All I know is the burgers were great. I had both of them.
Burgers are fantastic. And also, Tradesman is located at 1322 Chestnut Street. It's an American barbecue, bourbon, and beer hall. Brainchild of Craft Concept Groups, the proprietors of the newly opened Bloom Brew Craft and Verst. Been there. Ubon. Finn McCool's Ale House, Tinsel, and Uptown Beer Garden. Craft beer, American whiskey, barbecue bar restaurant. They smoke the meats daily over there. And they provide four house-made barbecue sauces to complement each meat. We're going to give away four pair of tickets to Burger Brawl today.
We are?
We have four pair of tickets.
Give away today?
Maybe we'll give it away tomorrow.
Maybe we should give away tomorrow.
Tomorrow is General's Wednesday.
Yeah, we'll give them away tomorrow.
FanFest tickets, and four lucky winners of the FanFest tickets with the right answer will get Burger Brawl tickets.
Yeah.
How's that?
And we have a lot of guests coming up in the press conference. We won't be able to give enough people an opportunity to do that.
Press conference at 3:15. Matt Klentak, Gabe Kapler. In case you just tuned in, Charlie Manuel is replacing John Malley as the Phillies hitting coach. Mark in Miami joins us. Mark, you're on 97.5 The Fanatic. What's up, Mark?
Hey, Mike. Good to talk to you.
What's going on, buddy?
This must make Gabe Kapler throw up in his mouth. I mean, it's got to be the most disreputing of hitting analytics in Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. First of all,
wait till you hear this press conference. Wait till you hear him. He's going to put on a performance for the ages, Gabe, today.
Who knows? Maybe you'll put on a Ryan Sambo.
First of all, I just want to say I have great respect for Charlie as a man of baseball, and I believe he projects beautifully with some of our hitters.
Mike, if I hear a launch angle one more time in my life, it'll be too long. You know what makes launch angle? Good hitters. I don't see them asking Pete Rose hitting 335. Oh, if you change your launch angle, you'll hit another 10 home runs.
Yeah, Pete Rose.
If you're a good hitter, Pete Rose played a long time ago,
bro. Everybody teaches launch angle. It's not just the Phillies. There are teams that are successful teams in baseball that teach launch angle.
Yeah, to good hitters. You talked about Chicago. Yeah, they got good hitters.
All right, I'm just telling you, this is not a novel idea in baseball. I would say 85% of the teams are teaching a launch angle.
But you look at the guys who are hitting 40 home runs. They're good hitters, Mike. They're not hitting 260, 240.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, all right.
But I've been watching him. I've been down in Florida for 15 years. And I'm looking, I knew this guy was a player.
Who?
Yelich.
Oh, yeah. And
Look at Santana now.
Yeah, Yelich actually is one of the guys that is not that big of a launch angle guy.
No doubt about it.
But he's I don't think it's the wrong way to teach in this day and age of baseball because home runs are king. But this Malley was not getting the guy. I think he was cluttering their heads.
No doubt about it. Look at Segura. I think he came to this team thinking maybe I can stay here for more than a year. And they got him. He's swinging on his knees. He wasn't doing that at the beginning of the year.
Yeah, I don't know what to make of him. He finally made a play up the middle. He had 4 hours in the road trip. But he finally made a play up the middle, which I hadn't seen him do all year. And then Hernandez, in the same series, made one to his right, which I haven't seen the whole year. There were two best plays those guys made all year. Bob in Allentown, you're on 97.5 The Fanatic. Bob.
Yeah, my thing is, Mike, these guys, I mean, why just blame the hitting coach? Okay, so you want to nail a hitting coach? How about the pitching coach? I mean, what's next?
Well, the pitching coach's going to go at the end of the year.
Yeah, but I mean,
because they have to change. They have to change their pitching staff so much that they can get away with bringing in a new guy with new philosophies. The hitting coach is going to be different because if Charlie rounds these guys into form, then what do you do next year? You know what I'm saying?
Well, yeah, I can agree with you on that, but. If these guys aren't going to go along with the whole thing, I mean, Mr. Robot Man, has had everybody programmed to the point where.
Who's Mr. Robot Man?
I think, Gabe.
Yeah.
I think everybody is so afraid to actually speak up to him. They were talking about who in the clubhouse is going to step up and make a move.
Yeah. What's your main point today? What do you want to say today?
Well, I think there's no direction in the clubhouse, and
so you don't like the move they made? They can only make like a little one move at a time here. So they do you like what they did today?
Well, that's one step.
All right, so at least one step better than no steps, right?
But what I think the main step is the cog that controls everything, and he should be the first one to be on centerpiece.
You talking about Kapler?
Yes.
Well, at the end of the year, we'll see if Kapler gets the Ziggy. I don't think he will now, because in an ironic way, Manuel being here, if you can believe he is going to improve the hitting for the rest of the year, saves Kapler. They have to fire him. For the people that want Kapler, you had to hope that they didn't make this move today. And then they just bleed out of the season in fourth place on losing streaks. And then you can justify changing the manager. If Charlie wakes up the offense, they're going to change the manager.
No, I actually think this is going to unlock Gabe.
You think it's going to unlock him?
Yep. I think this helps Gabe.
How's it going to unlock him?
I really think that all Gabe needs is like a partner that can balance him out a little bit. With some of that weirdness. So when he said, hey, Charlie, go ahead, what you going to say to him? After a losing streak, for example, it's too late for that, but let's say he was doing it. Charlie would have been able to say, maybe not say that, or just to change his approach just a little bit. Because I think Gabe has some good ideas. I just don't think he's a great communicator. So I think this could help him. Because you have an in-house communicator.
You're presuming that he is going to listen to Charlie Manuel.
I don't think he has a choice. If the players start to hit, and they think it's because of Charlie. He either listens to Charlie or Charlie just steamrolls him. And I think Charlie actually likes him a little bit, personally. I don't know if
you think Charlie's going to influence the way he makes the lineup?
No, but I don't think players have a real issue with how he makes the lineup. I think he have an issue with, why do I have to see seven pitches when I'm seeing a fastball here? I want to hit it. Charlie lets me hit it.
You think Charlie's going to say, send Sean Rodriguez up in that key pitch?
I think as soon as Franco's off the IL, Franco will
really?
Be back. I do.
And you think that's going to be Charlie?
I think Charlie will say, hey, I need another righty bat. I can't live with this. I can't teach this. I might be able to work with Franco a little bit.
Do they bring Franco up and they release Miller? Is that what your prediction is?
No, I think Sean has to go. It's symbolic.
Oh, Rodriguez.
I think he has to go because I think that the people know in the clubhouse, I think Jason Stark alluded to it like a week ago. I think he has to go. But he's on the IL right now because he got hit in the hand or whatever. So he can't come back yet anyway.
All right. Press conference. We're going to be joining it when it starts.
Mm-hmm.
Matt Klentak, the general manager. Gabe Kapler, the manager. Talking about why they made this move today. Getting rid of John Malley and bringing in Charlie Manuel. Charlie is in transit. He is not in town yet. This is a travel day for Charlie coming up in Florida, I assume.
So that tells me that they didn't tell Charlie over the weekend.
No, they probably told him last night.
That's what I mean.
They called him last night. The owner's hot. Charlie, you want to come on board? Maybe Middleton called him and said, listen, we're ready for your return. Can you come up? Charlie talked to the wife for 5 minutes. Boom.
And the wife's like, I'm tired of you being around anyway. Go on back.
Yeah, you grouchy bastard. All right, let's go to Phil in Lehigh Valley. Phil, you're on 97.5 The Fanatic. Phil.
Yeah, hey, how you doing? What's up, Phil?
Found someone who didn't like the move.
Do I like the move?
No, you found someone who didn't like the move.
Me?
No, me.
Oh, you. You don't like the move?
No.
Oh, tell me. You got to tell me why.
Well, I mean, they were on the right. They were on the cusp. They hadn't had their run yet. They were looking for. They were going to do like an 18-for-20 run. They were going to catch the. They were going to catch the Braves, win the division. Now they're lucky if they stay ahead of the Marlins.
Whoa! What cusp?
They were on the cusp. They were just. They were.
What cusp were they on? Where are they winning? Where did you see a cusp where they were going to win 18-20? Where's that come from?
Nah, I'm just kidding, Mike. Oh, I actually like the move.
Oh, I said, why don't you do that to me, Phil?
I think
come on, man. Why don't you get me like that?
You're
creep. All right.
I think they should take it a couple steps further. Put Charlie in batting six, playing first. Take Reese out to left field because he seems to bat better when he's making up for mistakes.
No, you can't do that. You just got to hope that the hitters that you have in the lineup are somehow free from the shackles of Mally because Charlie is going to just blow confident smoke up their keister.
But Gabe was blowing it and it didn't work.
Gabe does it in a phony way. Charlie's believable, man. He's just, he gives it to you straight.
I agree with you there.
He doesn't have any fanfare when he's talking. Gabe talks in circles.
Right. Well, he does it in front of the cameras. I mean, we don't know what he says.
Well, he's saying the same thing to these guys. Well, they're all rolling their eyes. Yeah, fellas, I like the way you battled today. You got smoked. Yeah, but I like the fact that you didn't give up. What's giving up?
I'm proud of him.
We didn't quit in the sixth, Skip. we survived.
No, I think they're a fourth quarter team. They're still ready. They're ready to jump.
Yeah, it's too late. No, it is. Now, I hope Charlie Manuel has a positive effect, but whatever effect he has, not going to get him into playoffs, I don't think, because their pitching is not good enough.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, their pitch is the same pitching they had last year, basically, and they were pitching above their heads, I thought, all season.
Then it fell off. They had some moments last year, then the whole thing fell off at about the same time. John in Trenton, New Jersey. John, you're on 97.5 The Fanatic. John.
Hey, Mike.
What's up, John?
Well, it's obvious they brought this guy in, Manuel, to keep this clown Kapler under wraps with the stupid comments that he makes all the time after losing seven straight. We're going to wake up one day and beat everybody. I mean, what is Manuel really going to do with a lineup that's not that good? I mean, let's remember who Charlie Manuel managed. He managed the Phillies who won a World Series. Look at that lineup. And then when he was in Cleveland, I think he had three Hall of Famers in that lineup. So it's not like he was managing the Miami Marlins and winning the World Series with them.
But see, there's good hitters don't always hit good. So you got to have
good
a hitter.
Hitters eventually hit good.
Right? No. Sometimes they get into slumps. But if you have a guy behind you that still believes in you when you're going bad, that helps you return to be a good hitter. And that's what Charlie Manuel does.
Okay, but he's not going to make a hitter a better hitter.
Good hitters can hit no matter what. No. Because if you are, well, listen to me, okay? You had your yes and no moment, all right? Here's the deal. When you're cluttered in your head and a guy is preaching, take, see pitches, that let your aggressiveness goes away. So you're now more defensive than aggressive. Charlie is the exact opposite. He's a see the ball, hit the ball, aggressive. You're a good hitter. Yeah, no matter what the count is, you're a good hitter. That frees up a guy mentally.
Yeah, but guys know that they're good hitters. Guys know that they can hit.
You think Reese Hoskins thinks he's a good hitter right now?
I think he thinks he's a good hitter.
No, he doesn't. I guarantee he doesn't. He's late on everything. He doesn't believe he's a good hitter.
Well, was the same hitting coach last year?
No.
So it's a different hitting coach this year. So why would they take a hitting coach they had there last year and get rid of him? But Hoskins,
because they didn't hit last year either. They added new players this year. So they thought with new players who are offensive-minded players, because we all liked the lineup at the start of the year, Mally had a great effect on good hitters in Chicago. They thought it was a good fit. It turned out not to be.
So it's a good fit because the hitters are good. Did you ever just think that this lineup
John, when they put this lineup together, did you think the Phillies hitters were good?
No.
Well, how could you not?
Because they weren't.
Their lineup was pretty good from top to bottom.
Pretty good.
All right, well, whatever. Let's go to Mark in Woodbury Heights. Mark, you're on 97.5 The Fanatic. Mark.
Yeah, Mike.
Mm-hmm.
I'm all excited about Uncle Charlie coming back in the fold. Is he going to help with barrel accuracy?
Charlie would say, yeah, squaring it up.
Right, that's right.
Yeah, barrel accuracy to him is squaring it up, son.
Let me ask you a question, Mike. Mm-hmm. You watch a lot of Phillies games, right?
All the time.
Okay, why don't they hit the ball well?
I don't know exactly why they don't hit the ball well. I think their minds are cluttered.
Now, I agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
Paralysis by analysis.
Yes.
I agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
But they swing at so many bad pitches. They don't swing at enough good pitches.
Yeah, well,
whether that's because they take too much.
That's exactly what it is. Because now you get behind in the count and they got you. Once a pitcher gets ahead, you got them. That's why I don't mind seeing pitches. I don't mind walking. All right? That's a good thing. You get on base. On base percentage is a good thing. But to me, they don't swing early enough with on fast first pitch fastballs. All right, we gotta go to the press conference. Here's Matt Klentak and Gabe Kapler.
Man, just waiting for the delay, Mike. I'm sorry. I was told to send it. It's still not there yet.
It's still not there?
Still not there.
Okay.
I'll let you know. But we had to throw it. There's a little bit of a delay.
Uh-huh.
And they'll be going right to the press conference.
So how many seconds do I have?
I don't know exactly. I think you have about 15 seconds.
I do? 15 seconds?
I think it's about 15
you
seconds.
Do a countdown?
And here we go.
All right.
This morning, Cap and I talked to John Mailey and informed him that we were going to make a change at hitting coach. As you guys have seen, we have asked Charlie Manuel to step in, and he's agreed. Charlie will be here tomorrow. He's traveling here tonight, so he will not be here for tonight's game, but he'll be here tomorrow. As you can imagine, this was a very difficult decision. The hardest parts of our jobs are when we have to release a player or fire an employee. Those are the hardest part of the job. But the reason we did this and the reason we did this today is because we have 44 games remaining. We are two games out of the playoffs. I know that a lot of people are burying us and saying we have no chance and we haven't played well. And part of that's correct. We have not played well. We have not hit well, especially since the All-Star break. But we are not buried and we are not out. And in my judgment, with 44 games remaining, it makes sense for us to try something different rather than continuing to do the same thing we've been doing. And we are very fortunate that we have Charlie Manuel as a colleague here who is willing to step in at this time, is excited to do it, feels he can help, and will be here tomorrow and give us his very best effort to try to get the most out of this group. I want to make clear, I don't think there is a silver bullet here. I don't think there's a special formula. Charlie's going to come in and magically change things. I think to suggest that any one person has that ability is not correct. But what I do think Charlie can do is bring an energy level, a love and passion for hitting, which many of you know about, a looseness, a confidence, and a different message to our hitters that I think can be very helpful for the next 44 games. That's why we're making this change. And again, I suspect when Charlie gets here tomorrow, we'll make him available and you'll be able to ask him some of the questions yourself.
Matt, you have the first question.
Hey, for Matt and Gabe, you guys have been very steadfast in defending the philosophies and the work of the coaches. Why did that change in your mind, or was there something you saw on the last road trip that forced you to reconsider those statements before?
I'll take a first crack at that. I'll work backwards. The road trip wasn't good, but that's not solely why we're making this change. Our offense hasn't been good for some time now. Philosophically, this may not be as big a shift as it seems. Charlie Manuel, a lot of you know this, but some of you may not. Charlie Manuel has been very instrumental in the development of our organizational hitting philosophy. Charlie, although he has a senior advisor title, has been very active in our minor leagues. He was very close with John Mailey. He knows our players very well. He watches the Phillies all the time, often from the box with me upstairs. And Charlie Manuel, as a hitting coach in the 1990s, was preaching a lot of the things that have now been labeled as exit velocity and launch angle and you know, have some new titles. But that's the kind of stuff that Charlie was teaching back when he was helping Jim Tomey become a Hall of Famer. So I understand that there's a kind of a simplistic viewpoint here that we are shifting from new school to old school, but it's really not that simple. I think the messenger is changing, but I think the message will be largely the same.
Bob, this is for both of you guys. What do you feel like the most important aspect of the hitting instructor's job is? What do you, especially Gabe as a player, when what were you looking for when you were a hitting coach?
I mean, you were a player.
Sure. I think the first thing that a great hitting coach does is he's a good psychologist. If you can instill confidence in your hitters, if your hitters walk up to the plate with some swagger, feel like they're going to drive the baseball, feel like they're going to make good decisions at the plate, it's the most important part of your job. Looking back to some of the best hitting coaches I was around, a guy like Rudy Jaramillo comes to mind in Texas. I think the reason Rudy was so good at his job is not because he had any one specific philosophy. It wasn't because he was preaching launch angle or hit the ball on the ground or drive the ball through the middle. It was because he cared a lot. When I got to first base after getting a base hit, he'll say, "Hey, remember that time in June or, you know, way back when that you were feeling really strong and you're on time? Like, let's get you back there." And I knew he cared a great deal, and he made me feel like $1 million walking up to the plate. I think that's the number one job responsibility of a hitting coach. I think it's something that Charlie definitely has the ability to do. Circling back to Matt's point, I mean, I was with the Detroit Tigers when Charlie was in his heyday at the end of his run with the Indians, and those guys scored 1,000-plus runs. Those guys had that confidence when they walked up to the plate, from Travis Fryman to Jim Tomey to Robbie Alomar. Those guys felt good about themselves, and you could see it in the batter's box. Charlie was instrumental in that.
Matt, how much influence did John Middleton have in making these two decisions?
Look, anytime we make a big organizational decision, we're very collaborative about that. So John definitely was aware of this, involved in this, as he has been for a lot of decisions we've made. Andy McPhail as well. But you know, when we make big decisions, they are done with a, you know, collaborative approach and a kind of a united front. So John was involved.
Matt Breen. Oh, I'm sorry, Megan.
There's a lot of talk about the messenger and the messaging. Gabe, obviously you were around him on a day-to-day basis. Where do you feel like the messaging was off the mark, or what needs to change with the messaging?
John Maley was really appreciated by our players, really appreciated by me personally, definitely appreciated by Matt. This is much more about the fact that we were just struggling mightily to score runs. And Matt's point is that we needed to make a change. And when that happens, we look ahead and thinking about what kind of impact Charlie might be able to make for us.
I'll just add too, very much like Cap said, when the question was about what makes a good hitting coach, Cap said a lot of things. It's also about results. You know, if you score a lot of runs, you can make a hitting coach look pretty good. And that's what we haven't been doing. We just haven't seen the results lately. It doesn't necessarily mean John Maley won't be a good hitting coach again. I actually suspect he will be, because I think he has a lot of the qualities that Cap talked about. But when you have playoff aspirations as a team and you're not scoring runs, results matter.
Howard. Matt and Gabe, there's now a growing perception in the city, and Gabe, you'll understand why I asked this question, that Charlie Manuel will be more, if this team is successful, more than a hitting coach, if this team is successful the rest of the year. So I don't know if that undermines Gabe as the manager. Can you address that? And Gabe, something I saw on social media, which is not social, it's not media, but I got to ask it, that you thought Charlie should have been removed as the manager in 2013. So that's the second part of the questions.
I'll take the first part of it. You'll have to, first of all, you have to ask Charlie this tomorrow, but Charlie's going to work for us for another 7 weeks, and hopefully into October in this capacity. Charlie's been very valuable to us in the role he's in. I am super appreciative that he is stepping up for this role for the remainder of the season. But this is not a role that is likely to extend beyond 2019. I hope that we achieve such success in the second through the final part of the season and into October that that becomes, you know, a lingering topic of conversation, Howard. But this is very much a short-term assignment.
And Gabe, how do you feel about that perception in the city, even though Matt just addressed that?
I think it's great. I mean, the first thing that comes to mind for me is it's always going to be nice to have somebody who has had success in this market, both as a manager and in many other capacities, to be able to pick his brain. Like, we always want more resources, and Charlie's a great resource, and I look forward to having the opportunity to pick his brain.
Part of that question about 2013,
I have no idea where that comes from, Howard.
I wanted to address it before.
I don't even think I have a plan.
I'm wondering it's going to come out, so that's why it's already come out. So I just
I'm not sure what that's about, Howard.
Okay.
Honestly,
no. I'm just following up,
John.
Great, thank you.
Hopefully both of you can answer this. I remember maybe a month ago, a month and a half ago, you talked about simplifying things for the hitters. Do you think that some of the hitters have had a tough time adjusting to some of the teachings, whether it's launch angle, the type of swing, what you'd like them to do? Has there been an adjustment period? And have you simplified things, you know, recently as well for the hitters?
I wish it was that simple. I wish there was a simple answer to that. If you polled, you know, players around the league, you might find some that think that current teachings are too complicated. Others might be craving more information. Every player is different, and I think that is that's the essence of coaching, is that different players want and need different things. They respond to different things, and that's why we always talk about balance, right? How many times have I sat in front of you in some capacity and talked about the importance of balance? There is no one way to teach players. There is no one way to scout players for the draft. There is no one way to build a coaching staff or to build out a front office or to make decisions. You have to, this is my opinion, but I believe you have to have balance in your decision making, and as it applies to coaches, I think it's the same way. You have to understand you get to know your players, understand what they need, and then deliver what they need. And if you do those things, I believe the results will follow.
Matt Gill,
sure. I mean, I'll just follow up. I think we have a balance of players who want more information in our clubhouse and some of them who want very little in my career. And then, like, going back, some players will, like, literally plug their ears. They don't want any more information. They just want to go up to the plate, see the ball, and hit the ball. Some guys are thinking about their mechanics when they walk up to the plate. They want to know where their elbow is in space or how soon their front foot is getting down. And they might come back to the dugout and look to a hitting coach to ask those questions to. And some guys can't get enough game planning and just devour the information. They want to know what's going to happen in specific counts and what velocities are going to be like. And is his ball sinking or running or cutting? Sometimes they ask the hitting coach, and sometimes they ask their teammates. We can't simplify an approach for every hitter because they don't always want it to be simple. So we have to be able to I've talked to a couple of players today. We're in the customer service business. We're going to give them the information they want, how they want it. They're going to determine whether it's simple or whether it's more complex, and we're going to deliver that to be supportive. So circling back to Bob's question, when we send them up to the plate, they feel like the most confident version of themselves.
Okay, Matt.
Was anyone else considered for the hitting coach job, either inside or outside the organization?
Honestly, once Charlie was the guy, and we're very fortunate to have him in the organization. And once he was committed to doing it, then it became an easy decision. You know, had he not wanted to do it, we may have had to go in a different direction. But fortunately, he was not only willing to do it, but very excited to do it. I think you will find that tomorrow.
You would change any coaches regardless if Charlie had not agreed to do it.
Correct.
Todd.
Matt, are there any other potential coaching changes on the table right now?
No.
When you see kind of the results that you guys have had at the big league level hitting wise, has that caused you at all to reevaluate what you guys are implementing through the minor league system, and do you plan to make any adjustments to that?
I think we're constantly evaluating what we do, and that's whether you're succeeding or struggling. We have actually had a lot of positive developments offensively in the minor leagues this year. Some guys that have really taken steps forward, and the communication and the synergy between our staff and our players has been really good. So I'm not going to say that we're not going to make adjustments, because I suspect we will. But as I said earlier, I think the narrative, if it exists, that we are shifting from a new school approach to an old school approach by going from John Maley to Charlie Manuel is far too simplified. I think this is more about changing the messenger.
Let's move to the other side of the room. Someone had a question here. Okay, Matt.
Yeah, Gabe, you've talked, and the players have talked about having your best baseball still in this team. What does a move like this do to bring that out in these guys?
I think it's up to the players. Right, like this is certainly it's a fresh voice that can be helpful. And at the end of the day, I think these players accept responsibility, as do the coaches, as does our front office and our entire organization. The first thing we do is we all look in the mirror and say, what can we do a little bit better? What can we do differently? Our players are going to do the same thing. So we may take off down the stretch. And if they do, they're going to deserve all the credit. And we're just going to rally around them with support. What Charlie can do is he can provide a positive influence from a guy who absolutely loves and devours hitting. And I think our players will respond well to that.
What kind of message did you want this to send, Matt, to the players, that, hey, jobs could start to be lost if things don't improve here?
That is not the message. The message that we wanted to send and did just send when we met with the players was that, what's largely what I said in my opener, which is that we have 44 games to go and we're 2 games out of the playoffs. We are this close to achieving what we want to achieve this year, and playing October baseball and winning in October. And I know that things have not been perfect. Have we had injuries? Yes. Have we had players that have struggled? Yes. Has it been perfect? No. But we are still this close in the middle of August, and a good hot streak will put us exactly where we want to be. And that's the message. The message is, we are not going to sit on our hands and do nothing. We are going to continue to push, and we are going to continue to try. And if everybody does what they can do, this team can play October baseball.
Rob.
Gabe, I spoke to Charlie last week, and he said the biggest problem he saw with the offense was too many players walking up to the plate, uppercutting, looking to hit a home run. Has that been communicated to you? Is that something that you see? And was that lost in the message between what John was trying to preach?
Oh, that's interesting. First, I haven't had a chance to talk to Charlie about what he thinks the biggest issues are with our offense. But, you know, circling back to Matt's point, you know, those teams that Charlie was the hitting coach of, the Indians teams, those guys hit bombs. Not saying that that's where Charlie will go with this, and certainly he's going to get all the support he needs to take this in the right direction. But, yeah, I think I'd probably wait to have that conversation with Charlie before I get too deep into it.
Marcus?
Matt, you've said a couple of times and alluded to Charlie sort of being on board with your organizational philosophy. Can you give, I guess, specific examples of things that Charlie believes are appropriate and should be tenets of your philosophy throughout the organization? How does Charlie, old school Charlie, match your sort of new school approach?
Yeah. Again, I think I'm happy to share with you kind of what I think of that, but I think if we just look back at Charlie's own history, both as a hitting coach and manager in Cleveland, and then the teams that he had here with the Phillies, you know, those guys, like, there were a lot of players, particularly in his Cleveland years when he was a hitting coach, lots of walks, lots of patient, grinded out at bats. We've heard this before, right? And a lot of power and a lot of homers. And that's one of the things. You know, just calling it what it is, this team has not hit as many home runs as I thought we would, as probably many of you thought we would. Now, I'm going to caution again. I don't think Charlie comes in here and tells a group of hitters, hey, do this and you'll hit more homers. It's not that simple, and I understand that. But I think Charlie's philosophies of working counts, having patient at-bats, and doing damage, just swinging hard to hurt the baseball when you have a chance to do it, I think a lot of those philosophies are very consistent with what John Mailey has preached and what we've preached in the minor leagues. Throughout, you know, the last couple of years that since Charlie's been in this new, in his more recent advisory capacity with us, he spends a lot of time. You see him in spring training. You know, he's around the cages, both major league and minor league. But during the year, he's out at our affiliates, and he will work with Alec Bohm and Mickey Moniak and Adam Haseley and many others. And he works with our hitting coaches, and he works with our hitting coordinator, and he gets the information. So he is learning, you know, even as a 75-year-old man, he is learning some of the more modern tendencies, and then he is working those into his own core beliefs, which he has had for, you know, dozens of years. So I think, you know, Charlie, despite not being a full-time hitting coach in some time, I think is pretty up to speed with modern baseball.
Time for two more questions, Todd, and then we'll finish with John.
I was just curious what Mails' reaction was this morning. Was he surprised, caught off guard, upset? Just curious. You know,
all those things. He actually handled it like a pro. He was really classy and very professional, but disappointed, which I understand.
John?
Does Charlie have full power to do what he wants with the hitters in an approach? I know you said the old school, new school is too simplified, and that's not the case.
Right.
But if he were to see a couple things that he'd like to implement that don't necessarily marry with analytics, does he have the power to kind of implement those things?
He's the hitting coach. And as much as any hitting coach has autonomy, Charlie will have that same autonomy. Again, I will say, many of the things that we do in organization are collaborative, so there's not a lot of things that a hitting coach will implement that Cap doesn't know about or that our assistant hitting coach doesn't know about. Most things that we do are collaborative, and I know Charlie believes in that. We've seen that in every role he's ever had. You can't be a major league manager in this league, and it's certainly a successful one like he was, without understanding the benefits of collaboration. But yes, Charlie will have the autonomy as hitting coach to do what he believes.
Matt, Gabe, thank you, and thank all of you.
Thanks. All righty, that's the press conference with the general manager and the manager, Matt Klentak and Gabe Kapler. They talked around it pretty much. I wanted to hear the direct question of what did you think that Mailey was doing wrong? And why weren't they responding to Mailey? Like, what exactly was the disconnect? That's what I go through that whole thing, and I still don't have the disconnect. All right, let's take a break. We'll come back. We'll talk about it. 610-632-0975. We have the Phils lineup for tonight against the Cubs and plenty more. McManus will join us. Jason Stark will join us.
The Mike Missinelli Show.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
97.5 The Fanatic.
All right, we're back. I had to run to the bathroom. Sorry. It's 3:50. We good?
I think we're okay.
There I go. Yeah. All right. So you just heard the presser. Any reaction to it at all? Kind of left me limpage. A little limpage. Nothing earth shattering. It was in that.
Yeah.
He made it clear that Charlie was a temporary guy. And we'll see how that plays out.
I mean, yeah, that's good. That's a vote of confidence for the manager. But like you said, if they do a good job, how's he temporary? Unless Charlie is nice enough to say, you know what, I'm good.
Mm-hmm. The question about how much John Middleton was involved. Well, he's part of our decision making. Listen, we can all read between the lines. I don't think we're stupid. There's no way that this front office would have come to the conclusion to zip their endorsed hitting coach, their nouveau hitting coach, without interference from the owner, who I believe, this is just my opinion, okay? Just reading some tea leaves here. I believe this owner blew a gasket. And I believe this owner made a couple phone calls. Hey, we got to do something now with this hitting. And that's what I think made him respond. Let's go to Chris in Williamstown. Chris, you're on 97.5 The Fanatic. Chris. Chris, it's over. The presser's over, Chris.
Yeah. I was here before you got back. Mike, you know, I told him on Twitter, and I'm going to say it on air. Rob Mighty gets a little bit of credit because he asked an excellent question, and me and him were talking about it on Twitter. You didn't have a conversation already with your new hitting coach. Is there something not right about that, Mike? Like, it's just, you know,
Gabe didn't have a conversation. Yeah. Well, you pretty much know what's at work here. You think Gabe endorsed this? You think Gabe called up Charlie and said, Charlie, I need you? This was forced down Gabe's throat.
Yeah, I get that. And
there's no question in my mind it's forced down his throat. There's no way he wants Charlie Manuel there.
No, because he knows what's coming. The way they word that press conference, always year on interim basis, come on.
Well, let me ask you this. Would you be comfortable with a manager now in the dugout who has won a world championship, who's beloved by the fan base? Would you want that guy in your dugout?
Negative.
Really? So you can't blame Gabe Kapler. I mean, listen, we'd all like to think we're open arms to everything. The fact of the matter is, we all have this kind of jealous streak. And with Charlie Manuel being there, undermines everything Kapler is.
It does, because, see, I think Charlie Manuel held quite a few of his players accountable. Heck, he blasted Jimmy Rollins. And, you know, Jimmy Rollins, I don't think ever did it again. You know,
exactly. So now Kaplan's going to have the pressure, because Manuel's there. He's going to have the pressure to say what? Oh, that guy didn't run the first base. I got to bench him because Charlie's here? Because that's what the fans are going to say? Well, Charlie would have benched him.
See, and this is the biggest problem with this team that still exists. It wasn't just the hitting coach. It was the fact that this guy does not go. He brings the guys into his office to air them out versus doing it out in front of the rest of the players or in public. That's a problem.
Well, like, nobody does that in front of other players. Charlie Manuel didn't berate anybody in front of players. That's not what you do. You don't embarrass them. They're grown men.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.